Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Conversations exploring life, faith, and hope. Discover more interviews at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Professor Gordon Parker is well known for his work as the founder of the Black Dog Institute and his decades of work as a university lecturer and hospital psychiatrist. The Black Dog Institute has done so much great work, providing clinical services and research to better understand, prevent, and treat mood disorders. One of its greatest contributions, though, has been to help destigmatize mental illness. At one point in his career, Professor Parker considered becoming a writer. He published a novel in 1966. After many decades, he's now published his second novel. It's called In Two Minds, and it's a rollicking good story of what happens when a high-achieving, staid medical professional experiences depression and mania for the first time. Yes, it's a work of fiction, but certainly informed by Professor Parker's years of talking to patients experiencing these profound behaviour changes. And yes, it does have a subtle underlying message. Gordon Parker told me that these manic episodes can have devastating impacts.
My personal view, based on obviously seeing a lot of patients, is that people will do completely uncharacteristic things when they are high, and that they really are not responsible for such behaviours. So, for instance, a rather sad and tragic scenario that I would hear at least half a dozen times a year would be of a young 16 to 17-year-old girl who has very high morals, she's never been in any sexual relationship, has her first high, and during highs, libido tends to go through the roof with many, many people. And during the first high, she has a sexual affair with somebody who's, absolutely the worst person to pick. Then she goes into the depression that was going to occur anyway following a high. But along with the depression post-high, she has all the accreted shame where she looks back and thinks of the behaviours that she has engaged in. And rarely do they tell anyone. They don't tell their parents. They often don't tell whoever's looking after them. And they often go into a very, very severe suicidal state. So a post-high state is actually marked by deep shame, whether it's in buying investment properties that you can't afford, being completely disinhibited behaviorally in social occasions, mm-hmm. and doing something that's atrocious. Sexual misadventure, as I say, is a particular common one. You know, the collateral damage, the common scenario for many people with a bipolar disorder is breakup of relationships, losing a job. Coming back to the question, my personal view is that during a high, most of the time, people do things that are against their intrinsic personality.
Our guest on Open House, Professor Gordon Parker of the University of New South Wales, amongst other things, and an author, exploring bipolar disorder through the life of a character in a novel, the character being Dr. Martin Homer, this hapless GP. Your insights into what's happening then to this patient in your novel, how does that play out in trying to help people around him to keep his life in some sort of check, or indeed put their own lives back together, because the effect on his wife, for example, is devastating.
Indeed, and that's a key theme at a later stage. She has great difficulty in beginning to understand his behaviours, and she certainly gives him a warning if they are to occur again. Then they're going to be grave risks. So in terms of managing bipolar disorder, medication is the priority, because this is a biological state. But equally importantly, and certainly once the medication has stabilised the moods, then having people take part in well-being programs designed to handle strategies is actually of greater importance. And they sometimes can be fairly simple things. So I remember seeing a couple where the man would have seasonal manic episodes, and a month before, he would just hand over his credit card to his wife, who would put it in the ice box in the refrigerator.
Oh, yes.
They put in a whole range of other safety mechanisms. And so we have psychologists run programs, weekly programs, for about 6 to 10 weeks, which are really worthwhile in giving people information about how to, you know, chart their moods, identify the triggers, work out how to handle the triggers, what to do when you're starting to go high, which can vary considerably. For some people, it's a matter of chilling out, you know, pulling all the blinds down, turning off any stimulation. For other people, it might be going and surfing frenetically for 3 hours. So it's really a multiple model for management. But one of the big issues that many people with bipolar raise, or if they don't raise it, they worry about it, and that is, after years, if not decades, of having mood swings, of being high and low, they often don't know who the real individual actually is, who they are. They have, in a sense, lost their identity. So once they've normalized, spending time with a bipolar patient, helping them to really identify who they actually are, can be a very worthwhile activity.
So is this the state of the art for treatment now? Do we firstly de-stigmatize? That's a social thing. Secondly, treat the biological condition. Thirdly, deal with the behaviours. And then is there a fourth? Do we put protections in place around the person?
Well, firstly, there's the issue of destigmatisation. I think in Australia we have destigmatised mood disorders better than any country in the world. But it's been weighted towards those with depression.
Yes.
When I'm managing a patient, I generally find that most are prepared, they'll tell their family members generally. If they get prepared to tell their employers that they have a condition, they're prepared to talk about depression, but they're reluctant to go to that extra step of saying that they have a bipolar disorder if they have one. The great paradox, in fact, however, is that people with bipolar disorder are 3 times more likely to be overrepresented in any marker of creativity that you can think of.
So, all right, accepting we have some way to go with destigmatisation, do we not talk about cure anymore, but we talk about biological treatment and then managing behaviours?
I think it's the model that I think we could probably use is to compare it to something like hypertension or type 1 diabetes.
Oh, yes.
So you've basically got a condition that is destined to continue, unless you're very lucky. About 10% will actually lose the bipolar condition over the decades. When it comes on at a young age and is very severe, it tends to get better with time. So it's an certain level of improvement. But most people, just as if they had hypertension and needed a drug, most people will need a medication. And ideally, that will be a medication that is not only beneficial, but with few or no side effects. And that's where our management is getting much more sophisticated, and where I personally have been running a campaign for a number of years now, because bipolar 1, which is old-fashioned manic depression and where the person is often psychotic, is a very different condition to bipolar 2, which is a much more common condition, probably affects about 6% of Australians. Most don't get the diagnosis. But the general guidelines out there and the general application by many psychiatrists is to use exactly the same medications for bipolar 1 as for bipolar 2. And our personal views, at least I should say my personal views, but also my colleagues at the Black Dog Institute, is that there are really quite differing medications. And again, the model can come back to diabetes. So type 1 diabetes, you might use insulin as your priority. Type 2 diabetes, you might choose another medication, or you might just use a stay well plan, you know, focusing on exercise and diet. So there is a greater need for education of the community. And again, I guess that was one of the reasons for writing this novel. Not only did I want to write something that would has been described as a rollicking story of sort of mental health, but also would gently try to inform the reader about the nature of bipolar disorder and the capacity that we have to really help people.